welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. I am very excited to be with you every week here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're trying to give you information that you may or may not get somewhere else, but from a little different perspective. And that's so that we can offer you the opportunity of checking things out that maybe you haven't before. New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are archived at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and many times our guests will provide us with a link to their website, as our guest today has done as well. Interesting program. Renee Mullen-Masters is my guest. She has a master's, and we'll find out just exactly what that's in as we get started with her and talking about the subject is you, and you are smarter than you think. I find it interesting, Renee, that first of all, welcome to our program. You use something that looks akin to the Rubik's Cube on the cover of your book.
Yes. Well,
and I have to tell you, the closest I have ever come to solving that puzzle is buying the set of stickers and putting the stickers on the Rubik's Cube so that it shows all of the colors are the same on each side. And I saw a set of Rubik's Cubes, and there was one that was all white and one that was all yellow and one that was all. I thought that's mine. I'll take that because I really don't have the time for that kind of puzzle, although I'd be very curious as to what kind of brain stimulation one activates. What is going on inside the brain when someone is doing that? And then there are those who can do these things in like, 10, 15 seconds?
Yeah.
They're so adept. It's amazing. Tell me why you think, what is it that you have researched, studied, gone through the educational system that tells you that we're smarter than we think?
Well, I will tell you a story that motivated me or touched me as a child and then got me going. And it's a true story. I was in second grade, and my very best friend got moved to third grade, which was devastating to me. And when I asked her why she got moved, she told me that her parents told her she was smarter than the rest of us. So then you fast forward and you go to our freshman year in college, and she and I took a botany class together. And this botany class was taught experientially. If we were talking about a pine cone, we had a pine cone in our hand. And after the first test, the instructor announced that I had gotten the highest grade in the class. And when I talked to her, she had gotten a C. And I asked her, did you study? And she said, yes. And it just confounded me. It was like, what went on here? Why did this happen? And then when I ran into Dr. Gardner's research about learning styles, and I call them brain talents, it all fit together. And it was like I understood why school had been so difficult for me. And the only reason it was difficult, it wasn't because I wasn't smart. It was because I didn't know how to use my brain talents. I didn't know how to use the intelligence that I had. And most people don't. And that's why we're smarter than we think.
So what you're saying is that we have a toolbox filled with tools that we have never been taught how to use.
That is the best way I've never... That is fantastic. I'm going to use that. That's absolutely true. We're walking around with this multi-million dollar computer atop our shoulders and we're using a pinprick of it, and we're even misusing it. And we'd be, it's weird. It's like we're walking around life with blindfolds on.
Yeah, yeah. What I find so fascinating in your description, and you and I had a wonderful conversation before we set out on this particular journey on this program. I shared with you observations of mine when I was in grade school and in high school and then into college. First of all, I find remedial courses beyond 12th grade appalling. Secondly, I was taught in grade school about the differences between boys and girls and learning, as you alluded to in your description of how you came to this place where you are today. Mm-hmm. Then when I got into high school, I started hearing stories about kids who had this new condition, and it started with an A, and it might end with an A, or it might end with a D, or it might end with an S for syndrome. And they were being given this new helper, started with an R. And as I got into college, and I skipped 6 months, I graduated from high school, and I waited 6 months before I took my summer vacation and sat in front of the TV. And my mother had no problem with that at the time, but then suggested, well, why don't you maybe go to a local radio station and get a job, maybe at the religious radio station? And I still remember my response was, no, I don't want to go there because I don't want them shoving their beliefs down my throat. The real irony was I went to go work for a religious radio station a couple of years later, and it wasn't them that was doing that, which was really kind of ironic. But what really got me was that I was told as a child that we learn differently as males and females, let alone as individuals. And then I'm getting into adulthood and I'm being told we must normalize the children in order to be able to teach them. And I thought, well, but wait a minute, but you just told me back there, I'm trying to understand what happened. What am I assessing it correctly when I say, ask the question, what went wrong?
Well, it's really interesting, and I've looked at this. And I've made some of the same mistakes that teachers have made. But when they made the mistake, they stopped. For example, people just don't know how to use the information that we all learn differently. A teacher doesn't know how do you meet everybody's needs? It's a big problem. And when I was putting this together, I tried to teach to all the different learning styles in my college success class, and it didn't work. And I threw up my hands, and I thought, okay, what am I missing here? I didn't quit. I kept looking. And what I discovered is that there's no way as a teacher I can meet everybody's needs. It is impossible. And the second thing is that it's not even a good thing because it puts the student into a passive mode, and you can't learn if you're passive. And so what's happened and what you experienced, why that happened, is that I think teachers really did try to embrace Howard Gardner's work. They got excited about it, and then they tried to motor it out, and they got stuck. And they stopped and they gave up.
Okay, we need to back up. Who is Howard Gardner and why is he important in this equation?
Dr. Howard Gardner in the 60s had a daughter that he thought was brilliant when she was a little kid. And when she went to school, they labeled her as less than average. So he began to do research. And what he discovered was that we all learn differently, and there are specific brain talents that everybody has, and And I took it further and said, and if you stimulate those brain talents when you're learning, you can learn very quickly. And Dr. Gardner is at Harvard, and he's been singing this song since the 60s. And when I read his book, his first book, which is Frames of Mind, it was like a million neurons were connecting, because every experience that I had had in school, it was like these ahas of, it was explaining why I had so much trouble one moment and why I was brilliant the next moment, which it used to confuse me. It was like I was thinking I was nuts. And why my best friend in high school got A's and didn't study at all, and I got C's and had to have a tutor. And it wasn't because I wasn't smart.
I just find all of this frustrating, because I am now in my 50s. I am now dealing with a system that is so broken that there are times when I find it extremely difficult to function in this society. Not because I have troubles. I am the problem child, if you will, to coin a phrase. But that the people that I have to deal with on the various levels within society, they don't have a clue as to what's going on. When I never worked retail, I never worked a cash register. But I remember being taught how to count back change to you. If your bill was $16.47, and hopefully I remember that, $16.47. I should have made it $14.92. $16.47, and you gave me a 20. I was always told, yes, start with the 7. 3 cents, that's 50. 2 quarters, that's a dollar. Now I'm up to 17, and I give you $3. So I give you back $3.53 in change. It's that easy. And I watch people at the cash registers, at the McDonald's, and at the various other places that I frequent, even restaurants, and I watch them struggle. They get the change right eventually, but sometimes they are, it's like, really?
Well,
that's simple math.
Something has happened, and we can change this, and I'm on a campaign. The reason I'm doing these radio shows is I'm trying to find the teachers and the administrators and the parents that want to join me in this movement. And this movement is to change the attitude towards learning, that learning is what we value. Today in schools, we do not value learning. We only value memorizing. And it's a simple change. I mean, in any one school, an administrator could stand up and say to the instructors, hey, the most important thing that we're going to do here with the students this year is that we're going to require them to learn. And students always do what's expected of them. I mean, research shows this time in and time again.
Yeah.
And it's not brain surgery. I mean, it's not that difficult to change this mess that we're in. It's a simple little, shift.
Now, let me back you up also in terms of talking about, we're just using a pinprick of our of our capacity, and in other words, the toolbox. We'll go back to the analogy of the toolbox. How does that correlate with what we've been told, I'm going to say, for the last 40 or 50 years, if that, maybe it's been that long, if not longer, that we're only using 10% of our brains? Is that what you're talking about, or is it something different?
No, it's that and something else. But let me start with yes, that when you use your brain correctly, just like if you use a computer the way that it's supposed to be used, it has amazing potential. But we also are learning that there is, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like when you begin to think outside the box, you access intelligence that's kind of beyond yourself. And so that's the other piece that we're talking about, that it not only helps the mechanism function at a higher level, but when that mechanism is functioning at a higher level, it has access to greater pieces of information. Einstein was brilliant because he knew how to work outside the box.
Mm.
And Tesla also. I mean, these guys were curious. They knew how to use their brain, and they knew how to go outside the box.
Okay. And it's one of those aspects that is so... I'm trying not to be too frustrated here over the way things are, in that there's a part of me that I jokingly would say to people that I don't know that I can go back and sue the educational system for such a lousy education, because I haven't read the classics. I was fortunate, and I have to give my music teacher in grade school a lot of credit for this. I went through a program. It was called Music Memory. Now, bear in mind, I love music. And so for me to memorize some of the classics and be able to identify them allowed me the privilege of going to, at that time, I was in Arizona, in Phoenix. We got to go to a facility on the Arizona State University campus called Grady Gamage Auditorium, designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, to listen to these works. So the sounds that we were hearing were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose in one sense I developed a love for classical music, although it didn't really come about until probably, you know, so many years later, to where now I have a fairly substantial CD collection of classical music.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one place where I have to say that I was given that opportunity to learn those things. It was just incredible. It really was. And there's an area where memory, you use the memory in a little different sense, in my opinion. It wasn't the same as memorizing statistics.
Okay. No, it's the same.
It is the same.
It's the same, except that you don't memorize statistics. You learn them.
Right.
And when you learn them, you can have the same experience you have when you listen to music. It's outside the box.
You think that that was a certain level of, do you think that maybe I learned to have a certain level of appreciation for
Absolutely.
Music? And
I
that's
think it touched,
difference.
It touched something inside of you.
Yeah.
It's a way in which you're probably musically talented and don't, you know, you don't have to play an instrument or whatever to mm-hmm. be musically talented. And it probably touched something inside of you, and that is a vehicle for you to learn things and integrate things, because it's so, you know, I don't know, it's so, it just touches the real core of who you are.
I know that I have loved music. I've got my favorite musicians, and the irony is those that I listened to when I was growing up. Now that I'm I'm in my mid-50s, I guess I can say, most of the artists are dead. But the thing is that a lot of other people who listened to other artists of that same era that I was growing up in, they're still alive, many of them. But mm-hmm. most of mine, they died in their 40s or 50s. I mean, some of them were even born right around when I was, mm-hmm. some of them earlier. I still remember one in particular, Harry Chapin, and my brother came into the room in the early 80s, and he says, "Did you hear Harry Chapin died?" And he never liked my music anyway, so I'm thinking, oh, shut up. No, he didn't. You're ragging on me again. And of course, I come to find out that he did.
Yeah.
Very disappointing. And then, of course, I found out another one of my favorite musicians, Dan Fogelberg, didn't even know the man had pancreatic cancer. And then, and I was fortunate enough to go with my first wife to the Sundome to hear him play and got shushed for singing along. I thought, wait a minute, but that's kind of what you do at these kinds of concerts. But apparently not at his, at least not in Sun City West. I was fortunate enough to go to a John Denver concert when I was 21. I was taken there by a girlfriend, an acquaintance that was willing to take me in exchange for me going with her to a Jackson Browne concert. I grew to enjoy his music, that is Jackson Browne, but not so much that she was then willing afterwards to take me to the concert. but anyway, it's those artists in particular, as well as the influences around me that have really, I guess the other part of it, I guess I was very fortunate in the educational system that even though I sort of complain a little bit about carrying around these large print books because I was legally blind through grade school and high school and even into college, but it also opened up another world because recorded books, I should say, I had the privilege of listening to things that I probably wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
My primer, as I like to call my metaphysical primer, the autobiography of a yogi, I have that on my phone. I listen to that as I'm walking around. I have a copy of another book that was given to me called The Impersonal Life, which is available. A lot of people have recorded it. I even recorded it for myself back in, I would say the late 80s. I have the reel-to-reels of that recording. It's really fascinating to listen.
Wow.
But when I interview people, we have a series. In 2014, we have this series that we're doing called Mythosophia, dealing with mythology. Exploring the depths of myth and story. I'm only learning vicariously through this process. I'm only learning about the various myths and legends and stories. And when we first started this radio series, not only Mythosophia, but also Just Tell Me Your Story, we had professional storytellers on this program talking about the importance of telling story. And so I'm curious as to what you have found. This is just, storytelling is just one method of learning. Certainly there's experiential, and now you get to create your own story. Is this what you consider to be a valid, viable method of learning? I mean, really understanding the workings of the universe as we live in it today?
See, this is the mistake we make. We make the mistake of saying that there's only one way to learn. There's only one way to receive information. We all know we all learn differently, but we sort of slide over that material and we assume everybody is just like us. And we make blanket statements. This is what we ought to do so we can change the world. It doesn't work that way. We're different. All of us are different. And until we start to empower the individual to be responsible for their own computer on top of their head, we're going to have issues. And we've got to start focusing on the solution instead of the problem. We've got to stay positive here, because it's the only thing that will change what's really going on. And the reason I know that is that Eunice Kennedy Shriver had the success she had with Special Olympics. She changed cultures around the world in 10 years. Cultures who were doing terrible things to people with intellectual disability, and we were included. They changed it, and she did it not by focusing on the problem, but by saying, here is the solution. And she is my hero. And she's my hero because she's taught the world a valuable lesson. And I'm about focusing on solution. Maybe it won't make a very good show, but...
Oh, no, no, no. That's what we're about. Looking for those new ways of living.
You know, that's what I'm interested in. If we could just get off pointing the dang finger at one another, and we could find people... I know there's people out there who wanna do things differently or sick and tired of memorization and kids graduating from college saying, I haven't learned a thing. They're sick of this. Parents are sick of it. And I'm saying, here I am. I can help you with a solution, and let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
We can change the world. We can change education overnight.
And yet, part of the problem is that our society today, specifically here in the West, is, and again, I'm in agreement with you. I don't want to keep pointing fingers, but we have some major challenges, and that is the high level of polarization in this country alone when it comes to, especially when it comes to education. Now, I've often said, and I would love your input on this, that you can do away with all of the basic courses as long as you keep in the curriculum the elective courses like music and physical education and the arts, because you're going to need the basics in those elements and you're going to learn them. You cannot perform music unless you understand tempo and timing and all of those elements. And that requires math.
Yep.
And it also requires English if you're going to write music, if you're going to write songs. Poetry, it's going to require you to know the English language. Now, I don't know if this is correct or not, and I don't know how far, what your history background is in history. There was a television program on a cable channel. It was called Deadwood. And the language that they used, aside from the profanity, was so, I'll call it, flowery. And I asked the question, did they really talk like that in the Old West? Did they really speak those words that we don't even use today? And I was actually told by someone, oh, yeah, because they were educated back then.
Mm-hmm.
Did they really speak that well? And is it true that our vocabulary list is now down to like, what, 20, 30,000 words as compared to 100 or 200,000 words maybe, I don't know, 150, 200 years ago?
Well, you know, I sound like a one-note song, but the truth is, it is a one-note song. Some kind of a virus has taken hold not only of the United States, this is all over the world.
So we're not alone.
I've been talking to people all over the world, and it's the same issue. And it's like there's this virus that has come in, and it's messed up people's minds, and it's made them believe that memorizing is okay and the learning is not that important. And I'm here to say that learning is the whole enchilada. It just is. I mean, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. I have often asked this question, and I'm going to pose this question to you. Based upon what we've discussed thus far, we're going to get into some of the solutions, because you're encouraging us to use our brains the way they were designed to be used. The missing piece to success is what we're going to talk about in our second segment. By the way, if you've just joined us, Renee Mullen-Mar, Masters, the book is entitled You Are Smarter Than You Think, Using Your Brain the Way It Was Designed. The question, whether it is a question based upon entitlement or deservedness, assuming that's a word, And I may have just made it up.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Do we really, as a species, and I'm talking the whole of man, do we really deserve to continue? I mean, my gosh, look at what we're doing, not just to the planet, but to ourselves.
Well, I have a more positive attitude than that. I just have to be more positive. And
okay.
And the reason I have to be more positive is that I feel like people are really good, and I think there's a reason why we're all here. And I think we're all fumbling around and stumbling and making mistakes and it's just like, you know, if you've ever tuned a guitar, you know that just as you get really close to getting it tuned, it sounds the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's going on right now. I think we're fumbling around and stumbling and making all these crazy mistakes. And we're going to, all of a sudden, it's going to kick in. And we're going to go, oh, yeah, that's it. And I love the Rumi quote that says, live your life as if it was rigged for you. And when you begin to live your life from that perspective, it changes the way you feel about life and the way you feel about people screwing up, like the Congress. You know, the Congress is going through something. And it's gonna work it out. I don't know how, but it'll work it out. And I just have a lot of hope. I do. I just feel like my life is rigged for me, and I think everybody else's is too.
I try to stay optimistic. I really do. I was watching a program the other day. They were discussing, it was actually a comedian who was talking about the fact that our current Congress doesn't get anything done. And his comment about my day when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, and of course, Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill, and of course, the red face, thinking, okay, this guy's he drinks a lot and so forth. He says, see, that was the difference back then, is these guys would get liquored up, but they'd still get stuff done because they'd get liquored up to, oh, you're the best. Your ideas are fantastic. Oh, no, yours are really good. And I mean, but they managed to get around to doing the people's business, which is what they were elected to do.
But see, what I think has happened is that we have swung. We only honor two types of learning style: linguistic and logical. Mm-hmm. That's the only two that we honor.
Right.
And we are so out of balance. We've got a bunch of linguistic, logical people in the Congress, and logical people think that there's only one right way to do something.
Mm-hmm.
They're unwilling to move.
Mm-hmm.
That whole frickin' those whole group, they're all that way. And what we need is we need some spatial people to rise up and get in there and get elected, and maybe it would open up the logjam.
And it may. And yet the level of frustration amongst a lot of people is that the system is so, you know, you used the term earlier about living your life, the Rumi philosophy or phrase about living your life as though it was rigged for you.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that the system is rigged against them, or not even so much against them. They're not even in the equation. It doesn't matter anymore whether I go out and I cast a ballot at the polling place or mail it in if it's, a mail-in ballot kind of thing, because the system's already rigged. Matter of fact, and the case in point, and this isn't any theory anymore, now it's reality, the Supreme Court basically put the rubber stamp on the fact that the corporations now, they run the government because they can. And they've been given permission to do so because they can throw as much money as they want at the system. It doesn't matter anymore. And that's what frustrates a lot of people, is that people just don't feel like they have a say anymore.
And I know that is frustrating, but you have to look at where you can make a change, because that's the brilliance of this country. This is a government for the people and by the people. And what we have screwed up on is that we think that it's the government that's going to make our lives better. And that's just not true.
I do remember an election campaign, to your point, an election campaign, and it was Al Gore. Hang on one second. And the thing was that I remember the speech that was given, and the speech during the campaign. This one in particular was talking about what we as citizens can accomplish, what we can do. And I'm thinking, all right, fantastic. Keep preaching, if you will.
Yeah.
And then the speech shifted to, and here's what the government is going to do for you. And I'm said, I'm done. I'm done with you. You lost me. You've heard the phrase, you had me at whatever. You lost me at, and here's what the government's going to do for you. I'm out.
The same thing that happened in the government has happened in school.
Yeah.
The people in power have taken the power away from the students and from the people. And the only way to shift it is for the people to take it back. The only way for students to start learning and actually being successful is for them to start taking responsibility for the fact that they are going to start learning and demanding it from their teachers. It's somebody's got to stand up and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I'm really happy with Oregon, that's where I live, because they told the federal government, we're not going to do this new thing. I don't even want to learn the name. It's something that takes over with No Child Left Behind. I will not learn it because I don't want to give it power. But our state has said, forget it. We're not playing that game. And California did it, and Washington did it, and so have a bunch of other states. And that's what has to happen. We have to start being responsible for ourselves. We are responsible for making this country and our school district the way that we want it. It's not somebody else's job. It's our job. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Mm.
It's our job.
Yeah. If you've just joined us, I'm Richard Dugan. I am here with Renee Mullen Masters. She has the book, You Are Smarter Than You Think. And we're going to continue talking more about just how smart we really are as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and I encourage you to do just that. Stay right with us.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I'm here with Renee Mullen Masters, and we're talking about education, and it seems as though there's not a whole lot metaphysically inclined about this conversation, and yet at the same time, I have to say that one of the things that I found so fascinating, this is one of the phrases I heard quite regularly, especially in working at the religious station, Renee, that frustrated me, because the phrase was used, but was never adhered to. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. I found that even more so in education than in any other realm of our society, and yet we're being denied the opportunity of the truth. Now, I'm not talking about what the government's doing, and we need to know the truth about aliens, and we need to know the truth about Afghanistan and Iran and all of, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the truth when it comes to, it's a very simple one. People have heard the I don't know if you call it a nursery rhyme or it's a saying or a phrase, the three R's of education. Reading. Okay, there's an R there. Writing. Wait a minute. That doesn't start with an R. Arithmetic. That's not a word. And it starts with an A if you use the correct one, arithmetic. Now, no one ever said, oh, no, we're talking about the fact that there's an R in the word. Usually, you use the first letter when you're doing acronyms and things of this nature. And then the commercials. How do you spell relief? And I still remember to this day, and I'm not going to spell it because it is not spelled R-E. That's the truth. Those are the truths that I am talking about.
Well, let me tell you a truth.
I'm listening.
That we're denying. I hope I haven't told this story already because I did a radio show earlier today. So if I'm repeating myself, let me know. Anyway, one of the things that happened that Dr. Gardner uncovered, and the story is in his book, Frames of Mind. What he found out is that in the late 1700s, I think it was, some people were setting up what education was going to look like in this country. And so they brought psychologists and teachers together to figure it out. And the psychologist said it needs to be, we need to focus on linguistic, logical things because that's really what determines intelligence. And the teacher said, no. It's much bigger. It's a much bigger piece than that. It's not just linguistic, logical abilities. Intelligence is a broader piece. And they had some kind of a fight, a war, and the psychologist won out. And so across this land, there was a lie that was sent out saying it was true that intelligence has to do with linguistic and logical abilities. And our school systems have been based on a lie, and that's why we're having the trouble we're having.
Interesting. And that lie has been perpetuated over and over and over.
And over. Now, and it has left two-thirds of the population feeling stupid, functioning below their potential, having that nagging little voice inside of them saying, you're not as good as you think you are. It's pathetic.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. It is pretty pathetic. I wonder, too, because there is we cannot and will not compartmentalize. We will talk about the various compartments, but they're all intertwined. Tell me about the role that nutrition plays in our educational system.
I'm not an expert in that area, but I know from my own experience with my own body, it's important. It's important, but it's not... Personally, if you're going to have a kid, then have enough money to take care of him. This is really bad on my part, but this is how I feel. If you're going to have a kid, know that it's going to cost money to feed him and to house him and to send him to school. Mm-hmm. And be responsible for that. It's not that difficult. If you don't want to have a kid, take the pill or abstain.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I'm talking about this.
Well.
But it's true. It's like we're walking around with blinders on. Everything, we're just walking around with blinders on.
So, in terms of, because I'll share an experience I had early on in my broadcast career. I did an interview with a nutritional expert. And this is just one aspect of our daily diets in this country. And at that time, the big deal was this new sweetener called Equal. or aspartame, as the chemical name is. And I asked her point blank, I wish I still had that cassette tape. I asked her point blank if all of the testing has been done and it's found to be perfectly safe. And, of course, she responds, yes. So, as a guy in radio, these places give, they'll hand out all kinds of samples. I got a box of samples. I mean, breakfast cereals and iced tea and cocoa and on and on and on and on. And my wife at the time and I, we started to eat this stuff up. And I went into really bizarre mood swings, and she had her own symptoms. And we stopped taking this stuff in. And then I decided I was going to do one more test. So I went back on it again, and I experienced the mood swings again. A few years later, I was interviewing a gentleman. We were doing a program on death and dying. He was a mortician. And I asked him how his industry had changed. Now, I didn't prompt him. He didn't give me any information in that regard. But I just asked him. I said, so let me ask you, how has your industry changed in the last 10 years or so? I mean, what are some of the things that are different? He says the biggest change is the volume of formaldehyde needed now to embalm a body has declined over the last 10 years. And he wanted to know why, so he did some research. And what he found out was that this particular chemical, not the formaldehyde, but the aspartame, turns into formaldehyde in the body. People were embalming themselves as they're walking around.
Wow.
And so this goes back to the same statement earlier about knowing the truth, being educated. And there will be, you know, and people are up in arms about Monsanto, for example, and some of the laws that are being passed and the Supreme Court's supporting them. And it's like, here's another corporation that is trying to control our food supply. To what I all of these quote unquote conspiracy things, I haven't been able to understand the end game. I don't know what the end game is for some of these groups, corporations, governments. And then there's the religious side to education. You have had to have run into this where how can you be sure when we talk about science, when we talk about physics, when we talk about astronomy, when we talk about the origins of the universe, we can't even agree. And here's the greatest paradox of all for me. We have a document that's a little over, 235 some odd years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's written in English, an English that you and I can understand today, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's an amendment, and I'm going to focus on one in particular, the Second Amendment. And we're not going into the do's and don'ts or the rights and wrongs about it, but there's an amendment to the Constitution, the Second Amendment. It's about the right to bear arms. That's what the amendment, if you will, has a title. And then we have another document that is 6, maybe 7,000 years old. I don't know how old it is, but there are those who allege that it is thousands of years old, but it was not written in English. And there is still great controversy over it. And I've heard some of the historical information regarding the Second Amendment and how even from its inception, there has never been a clear, cohesive agreement as to its meaning. And so I sit here going, wait a minute. So what you're telling me is here's a document that's less than 250 years old, written in our language, we can't even agree upon it. And you're telling me that this document over here that's over 5,000 years old by your reckoning, and you expect me to believe that it's perfect and inerrant? There's the logic. I'm not denigrating the religions. I'm trying to put forth here the discussion of using basic logic in terms of this process. Can you elaborate a little bit on what I've shared in terms of our inability to logically and critically think? So can you elaborate on what I'm trying to elucidate as far as this whole aspect of logic and critical thinking?
Yeah, I think that there's two things that we're talking about here. We're out of balance. And we have allowed one type or two types of learners to be dominant in the society and to do all the different things that have been done. And we have dishonored the other types of people. And it's time for the ones that have been dishonored to say, wait a minute, and step up to the plate and begin to interface into what's going on. There was a study done a few years ago where they took students that were like learners and put them in a group and had them learn some information. And then they took another group of students who learned all very differently. Everybody had a different style of learning. And at the beginning, the students that were like learners, they kicked in right away, started learning very quickly, and the other group sort of fumbled around, and eventually they got going, and the group that was of like learners, they reached a plateau. They couldn't get beyond that plateau. And the students that were that learned, that were all different, they went way beyond. And I think that's what's going on here. I think that we have honored these two types of learners. I know that sounds crazy, but we've honored two types of people, and we've reached a plateau. We can't get beyond it. We're stuck. And the only solution is to bring in these other guys and to lift them up and to make them as important as the others. It's not about putting the other guys down. It's about lifting the other guys up and letting them stand shoulder to shoulder.
Hmm. To me that makes sense. And I'm just curious as to how the work that you are doing, how has it been received within the educational system? What are some of the different reactions to what you're proposing?
Well, I have to say that the people that have responded are people that value learning, which are people in nursing. And for 25 years, they have continued to value learning, and they knew that the students didn't know how to learn, and they responded to my program. But quite frankly, it's been challenging to get teachers to respond. I've had friends recommend me to teachers, and they won't even look at the trailer to my online training. They won't even talk to me.
Hmm.
And it's been frustrating, but I'm starting to get a little bit of movement.
I have to wonder if these people are really interested in true and genuine educating of the populace.
I think that they are so overwhelmed with their jobs and so lost in the process and have taken on so much of the responsibility in the classroom. You know, they've taken all the power away from the student, and they've taken it on, and they're exhausted. And they don't realize what they've done.
Hmm. Unawareness of, yeah.
You know, they just don't realize. And they think that they are the reason whether or not a student succeeds or fails, that it's in their hands. And that is just not the truth.
You are optimistic, though. Overall, you are still very optimistic about the future. Am I correct?
Yeah, and you know, the reason I'm optimistic is that I have been talking to people. I've been doing these radio shows for about 6 weeks now. And I have been talking to people all over the world. And everyone that I have talked to understands what I'm talking about. They get it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eventually, something is going to pop. And I know that if I just keep talking, something is going to open up. And I'm not worried about it. This is all a part of putting it out into the space.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Sending it out.
Well, I know that in discussing this subject with or related subjects, especially these changes that we're going through, this transformational period, with many of my guests, some of them back in 2007 and 8, talk about the birth pangs and that there's going to be some pain. There's going to be some discomfort. There's going to be some struggle and strife and all these kinds of things. But eventually the baby is born and stops crying and starts to grow and mature and develop and usually will grow up hopefully into a fairly healthy individual.
Mm-hmm.
And our society, from that perspective, will continue on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in spite of some of my frustrations over the way things are and the process that, you know, we find ourselves in these days. You know, I mean, there's some things that are happening and I take a look at them and I process them in my brain and I'm going, this doesn't make any sense. Why are we doing this or that or the other thing? It just, that's like, are you kidding me? It's because that's the way we've always done it. Well, guess what? It doesn't work anymore.
I know. And yet we keep doing it.
There's a great, I know you've heard this story many times, and my wife and I, my present wife and I, we anytime we find ourselves in that kind of a situation, you know, out in society, we just turn to each other and say, Hamshanks, Hamshanks. And it's the story of Thanksgiving dinner, and they're cooking the ham, and, you know, grandma takes the ham and cuts off both ends and puts it into the pan and puts it in the oven, cooks it. And one of the kids finally comes up and says, well, why do we do that, Mom? And Mom says, well, you know, I don't know. Let's talk to so-and-so. And they go to the next one. And I don't know. Let's talk to Grandma. And they go to Grandma, and Grandma says, well, because it's the only way it'll fit in the pan. You know, and it's like, and nobody thought to get a bigger pan.
Yep.
And I think that that's one of the things that we do here is we try to present some new and innovative ideas. Yours are drug free.
Yeah.
But they're available online. There's
yes.
a lot of free stuff that you make available. By the way, I got a book years ago, and this was a great book. And I love the brain teaser books.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across two interesting puzzles. This is what they were, puzzles. The first one, the question was, can you find the pattern? I love looking for patterns in things. And basically, this was the way it was laid out. The pattern, can you find the pattern in this sequence of characters? And the characters were, and I'm going to paraphrase here, A, C, M, O, I, Q. Now, at first glance, you're going, there is no pattern of any kind, but I found it. The first third, the every odd numbered position, they were straight lined letters.
Huh.
And every even numbered position, there were curves in the letters.
Huh.
I moved on to the next puzzle. Can you find the pattern in this set of numbers? 2, 7, 8, 4, 3, 1. And my brain went nuts going, okay, got to get the calculator out. There's a pattern here mathematically. The numbers add up to this, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I thought, I can't figure this one out. And you're not going to believe this. It was exactly the same solution as the previous. I had thrown out the answer. The solution to the first one, because they wouldn't use the same solution for the second puzzle. That wouldn't be fair. And there are times when it's appropriate to use the same solution, except when you don't get a different result.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? Maybe it was Einstein. Wasn't he the one who said that if you repeat the same pattern expecting a different result, that's defined as insanity?
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, students keep using the same technique over and over, and I've watched myself do that too, expecting a different result. If I just try harder,
yeah,
it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
We all do it.
Mm-hmm.
We all do it.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. In terms of the place where people can go to A, get a copy of your book, I'm sure Amazon and so forth, and your website, but also a lot of the other materials and information that are available to start to stimulate the brain, to start to access the parts of our intellect that can help us to become a greater part of the solution to fixing the problems in our society. Where do they go?
Okay, they go to my website, which is youaresmarterthanyouthink, allwrittenout.com.
Okay.
And on that front page, the first page that you come to, there are two free downloads, totally free. One is Walking This World Not Knowing Your Brain Talent is Disastrous. And the other one, Mistakes No Parent Wants to Make When Sending Their Child to College. And I recommend that you go download them. They're free. I don't even care who you are. And then, take a look at what we have. The book, you can order the book there. We have a trailer that runs that lets you look on the inside the program. If you want to learn our learning system quickly, do the online training. It takes 2 hours to go through it. And I teach it. And it's fun.
Mm-hmm. How important and of what value is both the test and one's IQ?
That's a good question. I don't think it's any value. I don't know. I think that it really is limiting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an ego trip. I don't think it helps. I think it hurts. I just really don't think it does any good at all.
Mm. Okay. I don't know that I've ever taken one. I've taken an aptitude test that told me I should be a farmer, and I do love working in the earth, so I suppose there's a plus.
Oh, this is great.
And that was when I was 18, 19, out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am in radio.
You're farming ideas.
Okay, I'll go with that. I will go with that. We're going to plow your brain.
Yeah.
Pull the weeds.
That's it.
There you go. Well, I have only three final questions for you as we wrap up our time together. Over an hour, we've had the opportunity to talk here. And my first question of three is, who is Renee Malone Masters?
That's a good question. I am a spirit inside a body who has been tapped on the shoulder to take what happened to me and not let it happen to others. And I don't want any other student to feel like they're stupid. I want them to feel like they're valued and uplifted. And so I guess I'm their cheerleader. I'm a cheerleader. That's what I am.
We can use many these days. We really can. Next question is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
To tell you the truth, I'm not really focused on the system and changing the system. That's not where my interest is. What my interest is changing the way a student learns one student at a time, because ultimately that is what I'm really interested in. I'm more interested in the person than I am in the institution.
Okay. And finally, who inspires you?
Wow. I have lots of people who inspire me, but right now, I think that, as I mentioned, that Eunice Kennedy Shriver really inspires me. I think that she changed the world one person at a time, and she did it by being incredibly positive. And, you know, that inspires me, and that's what I want to do.
Well, you are quite an inspiration to us here on the program because I'll phrase it this way, because you give a damn. Because you want more for our society and our civilization and its people than what we have today, which is what we are striving for. We want more, not things. We want more out of the life that we have than just running the treadmill and feeding the machine.
Amen.
And education will, I honestly believe this, that if we can, even if it's in little schoolhouses across the country and around the world, even if we do it outside the system and we educate people, then they are the ones that are going to break the chains and the bonds that the powers that be have been holding us in for so long. Because once you know that it ain't real, once you realize that they never had control in the first place other than through fear and manipulation, guess what? The universe, if you will, is your oyster.
Absolutely.
You can accomplish anything and everything that you want.
Yep.
Renee, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here. I really appreciate what you're doing, Richard.
Keep
it up.
I will. Renee Milan Masters, and the book is, and the website, You Are Smarter Than You Think. And the subtitle is Using Your Brain the Way It Was Designed. And you know, we didn't even get into who designed it. But that we'll have to save for another time. Renee, again, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.